Welcome to another episode of Another Brick in the Wall. Today, we're going to speak to Andrew Tsai from Slick Architects, and we're going to talk about a project that is pretty remote. It sits on the cliff in the middle of the jungle in the Philippines. We found it almost by accident. It's not, well, it's published, but it's not widely published. It's a house that is important for the clients for sure, but for the office as well. And in terms of privacy, it's almost like a secret jewel in the middle of the jungle. And it's a pleasure for me to welcome Andrew onto the podcast and have a conversation about this house. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Pat. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for taking the time. I know in terms of time zone, especially, we're having to coordinate this.
It's fine.
Okay, I'm going to jump straight into it. Slick is a relatively young office. There's three partners. You're all, I'm assuming, in your early 30s, and you got such an amazing commission. How did you guys get this? How did you do it?
Yes. Well, I understand how it looks like having this project is quite, for us, a small firm, it's an interesting portfolio for us. But I think one of the main ways or the main part of getting this project is for us is opportunity, is a combination of opportunity, timing, and preparedness in our part. Because when the client of ours approached us, he already had a project in mind, actually. And it's completely different from what is the project now. It was supposedly a typical residential rest house that he wanted to build, like a three-story, couple of rooms, and for their family to stay on. But I guess since when we saw the site or the property or the location at that time, we were really inspired by how the slope or the topography looks, and even the view, especially. And
Andrew, sorry, let me interrupt you because being a podcast, some people have never seen the house. So the house is called Quarry House. And can I ask you to sort of describe a little bit the house? How does it look? How does it sit in the landscape? And then let's continue back to the story because it's fascinating.
Okay. So the project is named Quarry House, and it's a multi-structured private residence. It's designed to be a rest house for the client. That the design approach that we made is to make it look like a resort, but it's used privately. That's a basic way of explaining it. It's a multiple structure that is hugging the topography on the side of the mountain.
Yeah, I would almost say it feels like it cascades down the mountain.
Yes, it's cascading down the mountain. And a lot of that, the approach on what we did in the design is basically from the context of what we saw during our first visit. If I continue, I'll continue with the story, I guess.
Yes, please, please, please do. You were telling us about when you first visited the land. I don't know if the client had already purchased the land. How was that relationship with meeting the client and seeing the land for the first time?
It was interesting because the property was already owned by the client for a couple of years at that time, by the time we saw it. And I guess the main reason that he got the property was because of the view, and also it's connecting to the beach. There's a beach front on the slope, and the property is like 70 meters above the sea level. So it's quite an interesting slope. And the slope is around 40 degrees. If you see, this is the structural we did there is quite interesting as well.
Well, it's quite steep.
Yeah.
From the photos, it looks like it's pretty isolated. There's no neighbors almost.
Yes. Well, it is isolated, especially at the start. There were no built infrastructure going in there. We have to drive 30 minutes into the forest to reach the area, but there are small structures scattered along the mountain. But if you see where the site is located or the project is located, there's not a lot of neighbors around. So it's quite nice, quite peaceful.
Yeah. So you're a young firm. You've got this amazing piece of land, a client that potentially could have chosen almost any architect if he has that kind of piece of land. How does he choose you guys? How did you convince him to give you this job?
I guess the approach that we took was completely different from what he was thinking. And that surprised him quite a bit. And because of, well, to be honest to you, if you ask me why the client trusted us to build the project, you have to ask him. But he did trust us. And we explained it in a way that very simply, we explained it to him how that it's something that we could do it, that it could be done. And yeah, he took a leap of faith with us.
Yeah, and I'm really happy he did. I'm really happy he did, because it's a beautiful piece of architecture, not only by its shape and its form, the way it interacts with the landscape, but also in terms of materials. So it's a remote location. I don't know how easy it was to source materials for a place like this, but you made a choice, I'm assuming quite deliberate, to use stabilized soil bricks and also limestone. So can you tell us a little bit about the design process?
The owner is the one who made the bricks. That's why it's with the using that material is quite easy for us, since it's already been being done by the owner. But the initial use of his bricks was to use this for low cost construction. He made it for creating socialized housing, easy to build. It's a interlocking. It has an interlocking system, and it's already a what do you call this bearing? It's a bearing structure. It can withstand 2,000 psi of weight on its own. So it can stand on its own for at least two stories. So the brief that the client gave us is, how do we make this brick look high end in terms because he wanted to use it for his rest house. So interesting part is the client is really open to develop the brick with us. So we really work closely with the client with this to design to change how the brick looks, from the color to the texture, to even how some of the shapes were formed, because we use this brick extensively throughout the whole project.
Yeah, you see that. For those that haven't by now gone online and Googled Quarry House to try and have some images, the brick is everywhere, and the textures and the patterns it creates are unbelievable. I've used similar type of bricks in my work in Southern Africa, and mainly in low-cost housing, as you've said. So to see it then used in a high-end project is really special. Did you have to stabilize the brick more than usual because it's been left exposed in a jungle environment, or what was the technical process behind that?
The only thing we added during the development process is to create a waterproof barrier on the surface of the brick. But everything else, like the texture of the brick, is we want to make it look as natural as possible. So even though there are chips on the side, small gaps, it still looks part of the architecture design. So we intentionally did that. So even the client was asking that, what do we do if there's imperfection? We said that just leave it there. If you see a stone on the ground that breaks, it's something like that. Like you want to make it look natural. So and that's the part of the project also that we focus on. Since the project is quite remote, we don't want to have too much maintenance on the surface of the structures. So even if you leave it there for years, it will just look like something that belongs in the jungle.
Yeah, it does. And just obviously, I'm not going to ask you where the house is precisely, but just to have an idea, during construction, how far away was the nearest place to buy construction material?
Well, it's quite a bit of distance, but I think around an hour away. Some of the closest areas for construction materials, but I think because of the owner's use of his brick, he that's some of the materials like the stones or the even the labor, we all source it local builders that really help creating this project. So we try to source everything as locally as possible, so everything would not be, the logistics won't be too heavy also in the with the client.
Yeah, and the bricks were made with the soil from the site itself.
Yes, there are sand and in the soil that were cut, and it's mixed throughout the bricks. So some of the texture, if you can see the brick in actual look, you will see a little bit of seashells also in the texture, which is the one of the interesting detail that you don't see in the photos.
Okay, amazing. And the presumably you brought some brick making machines onto the site. The bricks were made there.
Yeah.
How many people were involved, and how long did it take to make the bricks themselves?
The development of the brick is took quite a while. It took us months to develop how it looks in the final form. But after that, everything was was built easily at the site. I guess the construction at the time that we were constructing this project, it was during the pandemic, so it was quite difficult to do a lot of back and forth with the workers. And well, that's why what happened was we got local builders who live near the area who can easily build the bricks and on site.
In terms of the level of skill from the builders, how would you describe the builders that were working? Were they highly skilled people, or the bricks were produced by people with good skills but not the people that would normally work on a high-end project?
I think it's a combination of the workers who are there have good skills, but the materials itself is quite easy to use. So the error of the having errors is quite low. But we also have the foreman and the contractor who really understood our vision during the construction, that really helped us complete the whole project neatly.
How often were you or your team on site?
We go there maybe, especially during the pandemic, it's a very short, minimal time, but we try to go there at least twice or once a month when ending, the project is already ending, but we try to go there as much as possible.
How were you able to control the construction? Did you have very detailed drawings? Were the builder and the foreman and the contractor relatively and high skilled people that could interpret the drawings?
Yes. I guess one of the advantages that we have in our firm is using BIM, BIM. Our firm is using ArchiCAD for everything that we're building. So that application using BIM really made a huge difference with regards of the visual aspect of building the project, because we didn't just rely on the 2D blueprint. The form or the the people in charge has a computer that they can visualize every detail that we did in our program. So yeah, it's a very useful tool for us in our project as well.
That's amazing. We use ARCHICAD in our office as well. And we developed everything in BIM. We love it as a tool, but unfortunately, the construction companies and the Portuguese construction industry is relatively advanced, but they're not used to having that kind of tool on site. So I don't know anything about the construction industry in the Philippines. We started our pre-conversation talking about the universities, but apparently, even building in a remote location, there could be somebody there with a computer interpreting the BIM model and making sure the details were followed.
Well, you just have to have a small laptop. I think with the BIM model transfer, it's relatively quite user-friendly. So in a way, it took a lot of effort for them to have them use the program. But once they get used to the program, it's they cannot work without it.
Yeah, they can't go back now. And tell me, so we have this house with very limited infrastructure when you start. How is it powered? How does the house function from an environmental point of view?
We did use solar powers in our project, not 100%. I guess because of the architecture, how we designed the project, the main use of our solar equipment, the solar power equipment, was to power the mechanical aspect, like the air conditioning or anything that that's really needs a lot of power. But when it comes to general sunlight or the way we designed the structure, it doesn't really need to have a huge source of energy. It doesn't consume a lot of energy as well. And another aspect, we also use a water harvesting system because of the remoteness of the location, there is no direct supply line of water. So the client, they rely on water delivery system from the local government. So we substitute that with having a water catchment system. And it's in the Philippines, it can be very useful because it rains almost half the year. So we do have a lot of water to harvest.
No, the house, so let's go back to try and help our listeners understand it. It's this amazing structure, very geometrical, and almost the patterns you see in the bricks, you then see in the volumes of the house and how they turn and cascade down the slope. How challenging was it? And essentially, it's almost three houses in one, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. The site itself is quite challenging, especially when we went to the site, first time we saw the site, we saw a lot of limestones underneath. And that's also why the house looks how it looks. The yellow hue is from the stone that we uncover underneath. We uncovered yellow limestones. Building with around limestone is quite difficult because of how soft and how brittle the stone is. So we work with engineers here to design a good structural system, how not to interfere with the soil too much, but just lightly standing on top of the limestone. So that's a part that really took a while during our development stage, the soil structure. It's very interesting when we had the geodetic engineer look at what's inside. There's actually a huge void underneath the mountain. So that really worked on how we designed the structural system for the house.
Yeah. So it's almost like a structure that lightly touches the ground. The Philippines have a high level of seismic activity. And I've read in some of the posts about the project that the load-bearing walls were designed to cope with that. Did you have to have a complementary concrete structure?
what we did underneath is we used micropiling around each structure to cope with its individual seismic effect. If there's seismic activity that happens, it will not be affected altogether, but it will have an individual support that will hold each other together.
Interesting. And one of the challenges, Portugal, like the Philippines, is a seismic zone. We haven't had any seismic activity or any significant seismic activity for 250 years, but unfortunately, the last time there was a major incident, a lot of Lisbon got flattened in 1755, and the whole city had to be rebuilt after that. But because of that and legacy and people's correctly, or people worrying correctly about how the cities are because they are built in seismic zones, the building code here is very strict in terms of having a main structure, and building load-bearing walls just in brick sometimes is very complicated. It's hard to justify it from a building code point of view. What was your experience with that in a place like?
Here in the Philippines, it's quite strict as well, the building code when it comes to designing or when it comes to seismic load. It's very comprehensive and very strict. So we made sure that designing this project structurally, that even though it looks how it looks, it's still we still over delivered on how the structure is made. So just to make sure, if ever something big or any seismic activity happened, we will still be safe. Actually, there were a little bit of activities during the whole when the project is done, but so far everything is safe.
And so we have this superstructure built out of the soil bricks, and then there are slabs that flat roofs that cover a lot of these volumes. They're all slightly angled to take in the view, I'm understanding.
Yeah.
And then the interiors, how was the work done around the interiors, and how difficult was it, or where did the carpentry crews come from? Were they also sourced locally, or they came from further afield?
They are also sourced locally, but well, locally, basically, some of the projects is from Metro Manila. So the project from Metro Manila going to the site is around three hours away. So in a way, if we source some of the interior functions or interior materials, it's not that difficult to bring to the site as well. But we made sure that all of our suppliers or our partners are local suppliers and local craftsmen. So that's what we tried to make sure.
And what was your interaction with these local craftsmen? Did you as an architect select each of these craftsmen, or were they selected by the main contractor?
It's a combination of both. So the relationship between us and the client is very important, as we want to build trust within each other. So every supplier that we want to talk about every aspect of the project, even the interior, we discuss rigorously, and we talk to multiple suppliers that we can work with, and we discuss even before getting the project, getting their project. We discuss from how the logistics of getting the project here, making sure that this, if they work it on their warehouse, they can fully integrate that build straight to the house easily. Yeah, it's very work. it takes a lot of work, but it's really good for both ends of the project.
Yeah, and especially, I'm assuming this was even more difficult during COVID, because you are building it straight through the pandemic.
Yes.
So design process started when?
Design process started 2018, early 2018. And
okay. And early 2018, and then construction starts
2019, just about before the COVID starts.
And it finishes?
It took a long time. So officially, the project finished around 2021. So because other than the architecture, we also took the interior design as well for this project. The design of the project was so specific, and that we already have the design of the interior in mind even before we finished the architecture. So we also took the interior scope here.
The interior part. It shows when you see the photos of the building, you can see there's a lot of thought that's gone into it and how integrated it is in terms of having this experience of going from inside to outside, and the materiality of the outside walls with the materiality of the interiors and even some of the furniture. I don't know if you were involved in any of that, but it all's very integrated. And has this project led to other projects in similar locations, or your work has now revolved more to Manila and to more urban settings?
Most of our projects revolves around Manila, but I think this project really did bear a lot of fruit in a way.
Yeah.
This is one of the projects that we, of course, this highlights our portfolio, and it highlights how us, our office, Slick, how we work, how we design. And we were very also, in a way, we're privileged to get to work with clients that are really open, as open as this client in this inquiry house, also to explore design and to really challenge how the design, architectural design, really needs to be in a way.
To take it to its limit, almost. I've got three last questions for you, if you can still give me a little bit more of your time, which are, one of them is just my curiosity. The name Quarry House, where does it come from?
Well, it's because when we first dug into the soil, we found a lot of limestones. So we said it looks like a limestone quarry. It's the inspiration really took on the what we saw in context of the site, or the structure looks like large block of stone. That's we call it Quarry House.
Yeah, true. The second question is, what do you think a project like this, both its experience in terms of how you got the client as a young firm, how you managed to complete the design, how you've used very advanced digital tools to build it, and then worked with craftsmen to achieve this piece. What do you think this kind of work can teach other young firms that are starting out?
I think one of the things that we really want to teach other firms, or we explain as well with clients that we talk to, is it's important to really study the site, study the context, the location, the sun path, what the site brings. Everything that the project looks now, or how the materials was chosen, is because of what the site gave us, or the story of the site, what we saw. So that's a lot of, there's a lot of thought, or a lot of thinking needs to go into that before we just start drawing, or we start creating the walls and everything. So that's, I think, one of the important part of designing.
The previous research and the work that you've done. So if you want to say something else, please.
What we say with our client is every site tells a story. Every site is different. If you have a project or a property that's in a village, the sun path, the sun, the throw of the sun will be different in each lot. The views will be different. the requirements of the owner will be different. So each site has its own story. So that's the one that we were building on to create the design. That's why we yung what Slick wants to do, well, in a way, our specialty is we try to execute complicated ideas so simply that anyone could appreciate it. That's how we want to show in our projects.
And you've done that quite successfully. Now, the house is private and relatively difficult to find online and to get information about it. But when we found the house, then we also had a lot of difficulty finding you, because apparently, at least as far as I've understood, you only have an Instagram page. Why?
Yes, I have a Facebook. I guess we really haven't focused on the marketing aspect of our firm, but so far, because of what we're doing or what our project is, what we're really creating right now, with that, it's really spreading locally in our circle. Basically, that's how we're currently getting our projects. But definitely, that's one of our focus as well, trying to expand our reach globally.
No, pleasure, Andrew. Thank you so much for taking the time at the end of a busy workday to talk to us. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I can't wait to see what other buildings will be coming out of Slick. I will be following you on Instagram.
Thank you, Pedro, for inviting us here in your podcast. It's a pleasure, actually. Yeah, it's a real pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, real pleasure. For everybody listening back at home, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And please do follow Slick on Instagram and find the articles that have been written about this house. It's an amazing, beautiful house, as are many of their other projects. But this one in particular did catch our eye, both for its remote location, the challenges it must have had to be built. And we'd like to congratulate them again.
Thank you.
And if you enjoyed this episode, please remember to bookmark us, follow us, and see you soon. Thank you very much, Andrew.
So much, Pedro.
To everyone back home, bye for now.